This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 17 and 18, A Sluggish Memory and Birthday Surprises. In these chapters, we get a little image of Morfin again.
Yes, we do. And you need to give me props. I did not look up what a Horcrux was. So
good
on me. I really, really wanted to, but I made a commitment. I will not break it.
Yes, indeed. Very good. And then birthday surprises, Ron and Hermione still being a little bratty.
Oh my God. Yeah. The teen angst.
The teen angst. Again, just the duality of this book, which it's like a lot of people criticize this sixth book for leaning too much into the teen angsty drama and comedy and not enough into the, the darker memory elements. And I'm just like, again, I'm no filmmaker, but I could see a filmmaker thinking that these two themes are just so drastically different. We can't do each one justice or the film will look crazy. We just have to pick one. And if they were going to pick one, I just wish they would have picked the darker memories.
Dang, so they picked the teen angst angle, I guess.
Yeah, and again, all of those actors, they're brilliant comedic actors, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and can do it and can deliver it. But it's just, again, that's just not all of what Half-Blood Prince is about. And they just missed a lot of it.
What a sharp turn. Well, I guess maybe this, since chapter 17 was very heavy in the darkness, I didn't feel so,
I've never wanted to write screenplays, so I've never really thought about how, again, thematic balance drastically differs in books from film or anything like that. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have chapter 17, A Sluggish Memory, where begins by, we do not use the Hogwarts Express anymore to get back to school. Like, to make everything quick and safe and easy, they're just using the flu powder to go back to Hogwarts. Very anticlimactic.
Very anticlimactic. We dealt with kind of New Year or Christmas in the last chapter. I felt like usually there's a lot going on. And I mean, we're going back to school. We don't need to horse around anymore. That's kind of the attitude I felt.
Yep, it was. And Molly is, you know, crying as they're leaving, but that's so, let me open my notes. It's, you know, Molly's been crying a lot, it says, because she's really upset by the way Percy stormed out. Which clearly is a testament that, you know, Percy, as we discussed, had no interest in reconciliation, whether it was his idea to get in Scrimgeour's good graces or Scrimgeour pressured this. Clearly, this was purely for Scrimgeour to get to Harry. Like, Percy is not ready to reconcile with his family. And the way Molly is carrying on about it, I don't know. I just felt like it's, again, just because she's sad doesn't mean she's naive. I don't know. I feel like they portray her as, I feel like Harry the writer is wrongly portraying her as this oversensitive motherly, this stereotypical motherly archetype that she's just so happy to have her son back that she's not intelligent enough to see, you know, Percy's, you know, duplicitous nature the way her the way her children can, the way her husband can. And I'm just, and I just, I don't know, that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way that, that, you know, it's, you know, she's not dumb.
Right. It's very stereotypical. Like, it's kind of the reaction you'd expect her to have, almost just kind of emotional and, oh, Percy. And I mean, Ron kind of calls her out about it. Like, he's an idiot. So like, it's his loss, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Don't worry. He's such a prat. It's not really a loss, is it? Again, right. Great support. So again, this is just Harry maybe projecting onto Mrs. Weasley what he thinks a stereotypical mother should act, or the emotions behind the way she's acting, because he didn't have a mother. But maybe she's crying because she does know how duplicitous Percy is being.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a sharp contrast for Harry, who's like, I mean, we know how the reaction of the Dursleys was kind of like good riddance whenever he left, so.
Yeah. So anyway, they end up fluing in McGonagall's office. Evening, Potter, try not to get too much ash on the carpet.
Yeah. Oh, McGonagall.
Yeah, McGonagall, not very warm and fuzzy right now. And then they go up to Gryffindor Tower and the passwords change. And then Hermione comes jostling in.
Yeah, she's kind of all business, it seems like. You know, she doesn't really, she's not, didn't seem like a bunch of niceties. And I think it's because of this, like, lavender brown calling Ron Wan Wan, which is very obnoxious.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, first, I never really thought about, I forgot about this, but what's the password? Abstinence? And I'm just like,
I thought it for a second. Yeah. I was like, all right, we get it. We get what's going on. And then they make the comment about the fat woman and overindulging or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's the first time it's hit me that that was what the password was. Because maybe in previous rereadings, I just glazed over and didn't really think about it. But now I finally realized, oh, they were making a pun.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah. And so, yeah, Hermione comes in with the new very clever password. And, you know, Hermione's behavior, it's not exactly what I would call cordial.
No.
But it is lacking in the vindictiveness we saw, the degree of vindictiveness that we saw before Christmas.
Yeah, she must not have stewed over Christmas like I probably would have. She just kind of like, she's, you know, she does, I said she doesn't kind of wallow in the niceties, but she does ask, you know, how things went. And then they kind of move on. I felt like they moved on pretty quickly from that conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, and Hermione's, and another thing I made note of is that Hermione's like, oh, I was visiting Hagrid and, you know, Buckbeak, I mean, Witherwings. Again, further into my personal headcanon that Hermione probably has a closer relationship with Hagrid than the boys do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right.
Again, because I think they're both, again, regardless of their, you know, biological sex, I think they're both very feminine people.
Yes. Yeah. I think Hagrid, he's definitely leans into more of those feminine traits, which, yeah. Good on him. Be like that, man.
Indeed. With his rock cakes and his flower, yes, apron, and all more power to you, Hagrid.
Yes, 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 yes.
Hermione also brings tidings in a little scroll of parchment from Dumbledore, giving Harry his next lesson.
Oh, yeah.
And so Harry starts to unload on Hermione what he heard between Draco and Snape.
Yeah.
And Hermione's in agreement with Lupin and Arthur that because Dumbledore trusts Snape, therefore we have to trust Snape. And in the middle of this conversation, that's a little later. And he's acting on Voldemort's orders, just like I said. So she's still not willing to consider that Draco's a Death Eater, or at least, you know, assume that she's only willing to cleave to clearly Malfoy's up to something.
Right. Yeah.
And a big enough something that a member of staff is taking notice of it.
Right. Yeah. There's just like a heightened level that Harry has this at that nobody's really buying into. This goes very interestingly when he brings this up to Dumbledore. I know that's not really like proper English at all, but it's very interesting when he brings this to Dumbledore's attention. So
yeah. And so I was thinking, you know, with, you know, with Hermione still, like, clinging to, like, not wanting to immediately assume things, which in some ways is admirable. And again, in the way both she and Ron kind of infantilized Draco,
yeah,
to me it kind of reminds me of Olive, no scratching at the door. No, we don't scratch. Go lay on the bed and nap.
I thought you were going to say it reminds you of Olive, and I was like, oh, all no. Right.
No, it reminds me of, like, at a societal level, the lack of seriousness policymakers give credence to the issue and the danger of white supremacists.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of, you know, again, the whole, oh, if a brown person does a terrorist attack, it's Islamic terrorism. Yeah. Whereas if it's a white guy, it's just this lone wolf, mentally ill person. And right. It's like, that's not true. It is true in the sense that very rarely are, like, the attacks committed by white men, that they're this organized crime, but it's like they share their ideas with each other on these forums, and it gives them enough support, and not even like just logistical support, it gives them enough ideological support that they can go plan and do something on their own, you know. Right. And even though it's acting quote unquote alone, there's this whole subculture on the dark web that feeds into this stuff and condones this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like they do they conjure it up themselves.
So, yeah. So, you know, and again, there are a lot of sad stories of, you know, of people who get into white supremacy, not belonging, having dysfunctional family homes and, you know, things like that. And again, Draco is very much fitting into that. His father is in jail. He's in a very vulnerable state. I guess I'm surprised that Hermione, I think I've said before, even in the beginning of the book, I'm surprised Hermione is not giving more credence to the idea that Draco has been humiliated, Draco is in a more vulnerable position, therefore that makes him more dangerous and possibly able to lash out in a really not good way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, those reasons aside, I think there's a little bit of frustration, and I kind of don't blame Harry. It's kind of like, support your friends. I mean, I understand there's a bit of like logic and intelligence, and sometimes your friends are, I don't know, picking a bad boyfriend and you're kind of like, okay, this isn't like the greatest decision. But I'm not saying being blindly supportive, but maybe they really dismiss this pretty quickly, and I still haven't quite figured out why. I mean, other than like maybe they're just, I mean, they're preoccupied with their own love lives, and maybe they're like, Harry, come on, we know you're in love with Malfoy, like, let's just get it over.
Yeah.
And I know, and that's a fan fiction. So. I know.
And in this conversation, Hermione asks, like, how is Lupin? And Harry tells her all the stuff that he's been doing with the werewolves, and he's like, have you heard of this Fenimore Greyback? Yes, I have, and so have you. I'm not history of magic. Malfoy threatened Borgin with him back in Nocturne Alley. Don't you remember? He told Borgin that Greyback was an old family friend and that he'd be checking up on Borgin's progress. And Harry is like, okay, this is even further proof, because how well is some stupid 16-year-old like Malfoy have an associate such as the diabolical werewolf Fenimore Greyback?
Right, right.
And Hermione's like, it is pretty suspicious, unless, well, there's a possibility it was an empty threat. So, like, even when Hermione herself gives her own, like,
right,
yeah, Malfoy has mentioned Fenimore Greyback, who is like the most horrible werewolf in the entirety of Britain, and still she's like, meh.
Yeah, yeah. She's like, well, I don't know. And then Harry's kind of like, oh my god, I'm done. Like, he's kind of sick of it as well. And yeah. I can't really blame him.
Yeah, you're unbelievable, you are. We'll see who's right. You'll be eating your words, Hermione, just like the ministry.
Well, we'll see.
Maybe. Yep. And then he tells her about Scrimgeour, and the rest of the evening passes amicably with both of them abusing the Minister of Magic. For Hermione thought, like Ron, thought that that after all the ministry had put Harry through, they had a great deal of nerve asking him for help now. At least asking him with the sense of entitlement that Scrimgeour has, which we'll get to it a little bit. Again, this level of entitlement makes me suspicious that no one in the ministry knew how freaking sadist and evil Umbridge was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had no idea. She just kind of went, ran free and terrorized a lot.
Yeah, and like cut him in. Like, but again, I think as we discussed, like Rimshur shows no shock or surprise when Harry gives out his scar on his hand. I must not tell lies.
Right. So she's probably done it before, maybe. And they, I don't know. That's kind of.
Yeah. So anyway, but then they find out they get to start apparating lessons.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, because this is basically like, you know, learning to drive.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's okay.
Yeah, so no, maybe it's better when you do it yourself. I didn't enjoy it much when Dumbledore took me along. I thought you'd done it. I better pass my test first time. Fred and George did. Charlie failed, though, didn't he? Yeah, but Charlie's bigger than me. Ron held his hands out from his body as though he were a gorilla. So Fred and George didn't go on about it much. Not to his face, anyway. Otherwise, I guess they would have been pummeled.
Right, yeah.
So, yep. So they're all kind of, they're all pretty excited about apparition. And then Harry finally goes and has his lesson with Dumbledore.
The good part. That's what I'm calling.
Yeah, the good part.
The dark stuff.
Yeah. The dark stuff. And before they go in directly into the memories, Dumbledore's like, I heard that you met the Minister of Magic over Christmas. Yes, he's not very happy with me. No, sighed Dumbledore, he is not very happy with me either. We must not try to sink beneath our anguish, Harry, but battle on. And yeah. Here's an interesting tidbit. You know, he wanted me to tell the wizarding community that the Ministry's doing a wonderful job. Dumbledore smiled. It was Fudge's idea originally, you know. During his last days in office, when he was trying desperately to cling to his post, he sought a meeting with you, hoping you would give him your support. So it's not even like Scrimgeour thought of this on his own. Like, the level of entitlement stems from Fudge, who is in that situation terrorizing Harry, or giving right. the approval for people to, like, Umbridge terrorize Harry.
Right.
And again, that level of thinking that could possibly be something to happen. Again, that I can only see someone being that stupid and entitled. Like, Fudge is, you can only be that entitled if you don't know what Umbridge was really like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That. Right. I don't know. I will be curious if Umbridge comes back around, because I hope she does, kind of. But anyway.
Yeah. I told Cornelius there was no chance of it, but the idea did not die when he left office. Within hours of Scrimgeour's appointment, we met and he demanded that I arrange a meeting with you. So that's why you argued, Harry blurted out. It was in the Prophet. The Prophet is bound to report the truth occasionally.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. It was kind of like, oh, they get kind of some things true, but.
Yeah. He accused me of being Dumbledore's man through and through. How very rude of him. I told him I was. And Dumbledore is so happy.
Yeah, he's pretty moved by that, which is kind of sweet. I'm very touched, yeah. Harry.
It's very sweet, because I think it shows that in Dumbledore's eyes, he knows he hasn't, again, especially with ghosting Harry last year, he knows right. he does not necessarily merit this level of loyalty from Harry.
Right, right. And he's about to kind of like test that loyalty here in a minute with Harry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Scrimgeour wanted to know where you go when you're not at home at Hogwarts. Yes, he is very nosy about that. He's tried to have me followed. He set Dawlish to tail me. It wasn't kind. I have already been forced to jinx Dawlish once. I did it again with the greatest regret. I highly doubt it was that much regret. I probably had fun trolling Dawlish.
Right, right, right. So, but it's still a mystery where he's going.
Yeah. And then we get to Harry confiding in Dumbledore the whole Snape and Draco thing. And Dumbledore's like, thank you for telling me this, Harry, but I suggest you put it out of your mind.
Yeah, and this is like not, you know, when Harry presses him, Dumbledore is like, we're done, basically. Like, stop bringing it up. I don't want to hear about it again. And Harry's kind of like, ooh.
Yeah, and not of great importance. Professor, did you understand? Yes, Harry, blessed as I am with extraordinary brain power, I understood everything you told me.
Dang, I think it.
I think you might even consider the possibility that I understood more than you did. Again, I am glad that you have confided in me, but let me reassure you that you have not told me anything that causes me disquiet.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this is kind of, so he says all that. And then Harry again is like, continues to press him, says, so you definitely still trust. And this is kind of like, this is Harry, Dumbledore's done at this point. He says, I've been tolerant enough to answer that question already. My answer has not changed. Mm-hmm. And then what is it?
Phineas Nigelis makes us
being sassy.
Bringing the sass. And again, I'm conflicted because again, like the, again, I, both with Draco and with Snape, I give Harry more credit in not bringing the energy to the rivalry that both Snape and Draco bring to their, like, most, more often than not, Harry is pretty passive.
Yeah. Yeah.
In regards to that conflict. And so, again, I think it's unfair that whether it's Dumbledore or Lupin or Ron or Hermione, all assuming that, you know, that Harry's, like, suspicions are rooted in, like, again, his personal, you know, expecting Harry to bring the energy that Snape and Draco bring when he doesn't.
Right, yeah.
Like, he only has brought it very recently with Draco because of he's become so obsessed.
Yeah. Why are you so obsessed with me?
Yeah. Little Olive is staring out into the night. And on the little windowsill, being so cute. Yeah. And now, Harry, I must insist that we press on. I have more important things to discuss. Well, the only thing I can say of Dumbledore here is he should not be saying it's not important. That's like, he could be like, thank you for telling me this, Harry. I will take this information under advisement.
Right, yeah.
Something like that.
Right, right. I think maybe Dumbledore, and I probably don't say this often, probably could have handled that situation a little bit better. Like, especially not to get under Harry's... for some reason, it really upset Dumbledore this time, and I'm sure we will find out why sometime.
Yep, and so now they go into... Before the memory, Dumbledore goes into kind of summarizing Tom Riddle's, you know, time, tenure at Hogwarts when he was a student.
Yeah.
And... He says that the Sorting Hat, you know, sorted him into Slytherin immediately. And, you know, how soon Riddle learns that the famous founder of that the house could talk to snakes, I do not know. Perhaps that very evening, the knowledge can only have excited him and increased his sense of self-importance.
Also, I think it's noted about four times that Tom Riddle was pretty hot. Like, they're like, handsome Tom Riddle. I'm like, okay, we get it. He's a good-looking guy. Good-looking, creepy guy.
As this handsome, talented orphan, he attracted a lot of attention and sympathy from the staff. And Harry's like, did you tell them, sir, what he'd been like when you met him at the orphanage? No, I didn't. Though he had shown no hint of remorse, it was possible that he felt sorry for how he had behaved and was resolved to turn over a fresh leaf. I chose to give him that chance. Dumbledore paused and looked inquiringly at Harry, who had opened his mouth. Here again was Dumbledore's tendency to trust people in spite of overwhelming evidence that they did not deserve it.
Yeah, like that's pretty... I mean, all right, whatever. It's not like I can't blame him for it because I do the same damn thing. So whatever. Yeah.
But Harry's like, but you never really trusted him, sir. He told me the riddle who came out of the diary. He said, Dumbledore never seemed to like me as much as the other teachers did.
And typical Dumbledore fashion, he handles that very well. Just basically saying, I did not take him for granted that he was trustworthy.
So as Tom Riddle went through school, he gathered about... this group of, you know, friends. Dumbledore's like, I say that for lack of a better word. It was the weak seeking protection, the ambitious seeking some shared glory, and the thuggish gravitating towards a leader who could show them more refined forms of cruelty. In other words, they were the forerunners of the Death Eaters, and indeed some of them became the first Death Eaters after leaving Hogwarts.
Yikes.
Yeah, and so Dumbledore goes on to say that there are a lot of nasty incidents that occurred during their time at Hogwarts that they never could be linked to, the worst being the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Yep. And then, few who knew him then are prepared to talk about him. They are too terrified. What I know, I found out after he had left Hogwarts, after much painstaking effort, after tracing those few who could be tricked into speaking, after searching old records and questioning Muggle and wizard witnesses alike. So.
Yeah. And then he kind of starts talking about his, just kind of more of his history about his, says, to those who I could persuade to talk to me, that Riddle was obsessed with his parentage. So mm-hmm. obsessed with this, because he's, I was going to say he's the half-blooded prince. I don't know that. He is not a full-blooded wizard. His, so, yeah.
Yeah, so it was Riddle's assumption that it had to be his father who was magical because his mother, you know, as Dumbledore put it, succumbed to the shameful human weakness of death.
Oh, my God. And he's sexist. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Olive, what is it?
Oh, is there an Olive sighting?
Yeah, the Olive, she's like, he's like, why aren't you petting me? Why aren't you loving me and giving me attention?
Hi, kitty.
Yep. So Tom Riddle searched the trophies, list of prefects, like everything he could think of, and finally had to accept that there had never been a Tom Riddle, like, senior at Hogwarts. And then finally, he decided to go into looking into his mother's family line, and the only clue he had was his middle name, which he knew had been his grandfather, his maternal grandfather's name, Marvolo. And that's where he was able to finally find the Gaunt line.
Dun, 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 dun. Yes, with his poor mother. And it starts with an M. Merope.
Yep, Merope. And so now we go into the memory, which is actually Morphin's.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have Morphin in the Gaunt Shack, and teenage Voldemort is just strolling along, and Morphin looks at him and just starts screaming, "You!" And he hurtled drunkenly at Riddle, wand and knife held aloft. "Stopped," Riddle spoke in parcel tongue. So what do you think of this interaction between Morphin and teenage Voldemort?
It's a bit intense and
conducted entirely in parcel tongue.
Yeah, that was something that was interesting to think about. And very slanderous toward his mother, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so it goes into, like, you look like that muggle that my mother ran off with. And he left her, serves her right, that little slut.
Ah, no, I forgot that. I was shocked when I saw the word slut. I was like, whoa. I forgot that it's been a long day. But yeah, okay. That was a shocker. Yeah.
And so from Morphin, Riddle finds out that the guy who Morphin says he looks like still lives in the big house. And then Morphin's world goes black.
Dead, maybe.
And then Harry's like, why'd it go black? Because Morphin could not remember anything from that point onward. Meanwhile, in the village of Little Hangleton, a maid was running along the high street screaming that there were three bodies lying in the drawing room floor of the big house. Tom Riddle Sr. and his mother and father. So remember, we get the muggle side of this whole murder story in the first chapter of Goblet of Fire, the Riddle House.
Okay. Okay. I knew this was, I was like, what does this connect to? So, okay. Yes.
Yes. So again, Goblet of Fire tells, like, the sort of muggle version that, you know, the maid comes out screaming. They don't know who did it. None of the doctors can, like, you know, perform an autopsy to see, like, how they died.
Right.
And everyone suspects Frank, the gardener.
Poor Frank.
Frank Bryce. And if you remember, Frank, the only thing that Frank told the police, he's like, I don't know anything. All I know is I saw a boy with dark hair walking up the steps to the house. So we now know, well, we already knew that Voldemort killed his father. But now we know that specifically that, you know, that boy Frank saw was definitely, you know, Voldemort.
Right. It is definitely Voldemort.
Yeah. And so what is interesting is that Morphin immediately confesses to the crime.
Which he, so Voldemort obviously is, having his powers already this early. I think that's something that stuck with me.
Yeah, that is an interesting, because in quite honestly, it might not have even been necessary because, again, all justice systems suck. And, you know, Morphin already has a history of attacking that specific muggle. Like, that's right. What he went to Azkaban for. And so, and Voldemort used Morphin's wand.
Yes.
So already that would have been enough to, like, pen Morphin with the murder, regardless of if he tried to say, I didn't do it, I didn't do it. So, but the fact that Voldemort goes a step further, in my mind, in a way that was completely unnecessary, but just, you know, I don't know if it's a flex or whatever, just to see that he can, just implants this very intricate false memory in Morphin.
Yeah, it almost seems like he's, like, very, which I guess, you know, if you think about it very deeply, it's very kind of sick way of messing with his family before he kind of takes it any further. So kind of experimenting on how this works, and then kind of being like, okay, and then branching out further.
Yeah, and I guess I'm thinking in a way I never thought of before, again, when Voldemort's going to the place that he knows is his magical side of his family. Like, what does it say? It's like the guy who lives in the big house, but he's trash because he's muggle. But the purebloods, they live in absolute filth and squalor. Like his, like.
Right, right.
So. They,
interesting.
Yeah, and Morphin never realized he hadn't done it. Never. He gave, as I say, a full and boastful confession. But he had this real memory in him all the time. Yes, but it took a great deal of skill, legitimacy to coax it out of him. And we find that Dumbledore tried to use this memory to secure Morphin's release. But before the ministry made a decision, Morphin had died.
Yikes, poor guy. It's like the wrongful imprisonment. I mean, that's very much a parallel to that.
Oh. Indeed. And, well, that's rubbish, snapped Harry. Look what happened here. Look what happened to Morphin. I agree, said Dumbledore. Whatever Morphin was, he did not deserve to die as he did. Blame for murders he had not committed. This just made me think of, like, some conservatives trying to blame, like, the sanctification. I wouldn't say the martyrdom, sort of George Floyd, and, like, trying to go back to George Floyd's, like, other charges, and that he wasn't, like, a contributing or a good member of society. And it's just, like, that's not the policeman's job to,
right,
to dish out, you know, vigilante judgment.
Right, right. It's also, like, does not hold any water in the situation. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me, that argument. It's like, a lot of people do a lot of, you know, ill thought through things, and that doesn't, yeah, that's a BS.
Yeah.
Reason.
So, and then we move on to the second memory, which, were you surprised whose it was?
Yes, that was this was Slughorn's, right? This was,
yeah.
Because his are the last two. Yeah. Of course he's got to show up in some way, but then finally this way. It was very, yeah, very interesting.
And so, Harry sees Voldemort in this, like, sort of slug club party with, you know, Slughorn, and he's wearing the gaunt ring. So he's already killed his father by this point. And he's just sitting there chilling.
Yeah, right. So I'm assuming this is, like, Riddleston. Tom Riddleston. This is, like, you know, he still has not become the full Voldemort yet.
Yeah. And so what did you think of this memory and what happens?
This was kind of where we talked about the Horcruxes, right? It was this, mm-hmm, part. Okay, because the last memory is very short.
Yeah, because Tom Riddle asks, "Sir, I wonder what you knew about Horcruxes." And everything goes kind of foggy. And it's like, "I don't know anything about Horcruxes, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. Now get out of here and don't let me catch you mentioning them again."
Yeah, very strong reaction. The other thing that I think is of note would be the Lestrange name here, mm-hmm, in the... but yeah, so pretty much conversation ender. So that's like, well, what is that then? You know, I don't know what it is. And I'm very stressed out about it.
Yeah. So what do you think of basically the way in which, you know, though, as Dumbledore explains, that this memory has been tampered with?
Very interesting that that can be a thing that happens, but then why couldn't it be a thing that happens? I guess I didn't, you know, think about that being a possibility until it, you know, was mentioned in this situation. But yeah, I mean, kind of makes sense.
I guess it's an interesting thing because, you know, again, we have like imaginations, like, you know, Slughorn should be able to like, you know, pull out whatever he wants. But I think we've already kind of established that at least in this magical universe, you know, the memories, you know, don't take into so much account of like subjectivity and perception. Like it is pretty objective. The magic right. involved is pretty objective. And so the fact that it's so crudely done where it's just this fog rather than, you know, Slughorn being able to convincingly say, you know, I don't, you know, to give a convincing memory to Dumbledore that shows that this isn't true, because it's really hard to undo the objectivity of this memory substance, shall we say.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we kind of got an inkling of this, because even when Dumbledore first opens the vial with Slughorn's memory, it's not as smooth or vapory. It's like kind of congealed, and Harry is thinking to himself, can memories go bad?
Right. Yeah. Do they have an expiration date? That's, well, in my mind, in my head, they do. But that was very interesting. And that also made me remember that they can kind of like put it in these little vials and use them and later. It's kind of all very interesting.
Yeah. So Dumbledore highly suspects that Slughorn is ashamed of what he remembers.
And I think that proves to be true later on.
Yeah. And so for the first time, I'm giving you homework, Harry. It will be your job to persuade Slughorn to divulge the real memory, which will undoubtedly be our most critical piece of information of all.
Yeah, that doesn't really go over. It's not going to be easy, is what we pretty much learn.
Yep. And thus we move on to chapter 18, birthday surprises. And so Harry confides in Ron and Hermione the task that Dumbledore set to him, though separately, for Hermione still refused to remain in Ron's presence longer than it took to give him a contemptuous look.
Oh my God.
So Ron is very laissez-faire. He loves you. It'll be easy. Yeah. But Hermione's like, he didn't want to give it to Dumbledore, so there's a good chance he doesn't want to give it to anyone.
Right, right. And it also gives Hermione a little, like, mystery to solve, because she's never heard of a Horcrux, so she has a little mission now.
Yeah. And, you know, in the Hogwarts library, there's a restricted section where you have to have a teacher's note to, like, get into all the super dark arts books. And that just made me think of, like, literally the trend of, again, these stupid book banners. You know, even the more, like, again, quote unquote, reasonable one who just want to say it's an age limit or something, you know,
right.
Making a restricted section of the library that you need a parents or a teacher's note. And I'm like, oh, we're going to do this Hogwarts style.
I guess. I mean, and I think it never, the material in this is dangerous. Like, I felt like it's dangerous physically, not like inspiring different ideas.
Yeah, no, all of this is like crazy ass dark arts poison, the most intense and insidious of poisons. Like, this stuff could literally kill you if you don't know what you're doing.
Right. If you want to ban books like that, then fine. Because, like, if you only want the people that know what they're doing to, it's like that poison garden. Like, people go full gear to get in there
in biohazard suits.
Yeah, then fine. But in this situation, like in our book banning world, not fine.
Ideas are dangerous things.
They are. They very much are.
Indeed. Again, I hope one day I, as a woman, will have just as much right as a gun.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And Harry says to Hermione, Ron reckons I should just hang back after potions. Oh, well, if Wan thinks that, you better do it. After all, when has Wan's judgment ever been faulty?
God, please, and this nickname.
Hermione, can't you? No. And honestly, I don't blame Hermione for not giving down. Because, again, Hermione has always been portrayed as the most emotionally mature of all of them. And so, you know, I think we've all had those relationships or friendships, you know, those interpersonal reaction where the only way that you can maintain a relationship with someone is if you are constantly having to be the bigger person, because there's no way in hell that the other person will. And so, right. so I can appreciate, you know, when some people get to the point that I don't want to maintain this relationship, if I constantly have to be the emotionally mature person when the emotional intelligence is clearly so askew.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's stressful. I'm sure I've been on both ends of the spectrum. So can't blame her for that. And also, I think that that's kind of confusing her in her emotional state, too. She, you know, because usually she is so level-headed. And mm-hmm. I just feel like she's a mess of emotions in a way that she hasn't experienced before.
Like cancer.
Yeah. I know that very well. Those feelings.
Yeah, especially for such a double Virgo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Good old.
Yeah. So they go to potions lessons. And Harry's not looking forward to this potion lesson because this is one where you actually have to understand the chemistry behind right. the potion making, which, as we know, Harry has no fucking clue.
No, and he has no clue.
And that's the best argument you can give to me about this being whether what Harry's doing is cheating or not. It's cheating not only because it's not accessible to everyone, and it's cheating because Harry has not put in the work to know why these shortcuts work better than the original instructions. He has no concept of that chemistry or that alchemy. He doesn't know shit.
Right. And he's about to kind of be called out, and he kind of doesn't. It's like he did not think this through in the using. This situation was going to come up eventually, and he wasn't going to have the book handy. So.
Yeah. So, and Hermione is so smug about this that there's no way that he's going to be able to fake this.
Yes, she is. She's proven wrong, but that's okay.
Yeah, because what happens is there's a little note from the Half-Blood Prince that says, just shove a bezoar down their throats.
Yeah.
Which is the stomach of a goat, which he remembers Snape, if you remember his crazy monologue at the beginning of book one, you know, he makes mention of a stone taken from the stomach of a goat, which will protect from most poisons.
I did not remember that from that book, but, you know, I guess they were listening. That's great.
Yeah. So Harry just takes a bezoar from the cupboard, and that is what he presents to Slughorn. And he admits that if Snape were his teacher, there's no way he would have done this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Slughorn is like totally tickled by this. He just thinks
he is so happily bemused.
Yes. Yeah. Which, I mean, and Hermione is probably over there seething, right?
Yep. Yeah. Because her antidote contains like 52 ingredients plus a chunk of her own hair.
Right. Yeah. Like she is disheveled trying to figure this out. And, you know, Harry just like walks up with this little thing.
This little bean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't fault you. A bezoar would certainly act as an antidote to all of these poisons. Hermione looked livid. Like, the only person who maybe looked more livid than Hermione was Malfoy.
Yeah, of course. Oh, man.
And so he survives and gets away with this and gets even 10 more points to Gryffindor just for, as Slughorn puts it, for sheer cheek.
So, yeah, so he's going to try to ride this wave into fulfilling his homework for Dumbledore, which does not go over well.
As one of my favorite expressions, this flies like a lead balloon.
You know, I said this went over like a bag of hammers the other day, and my husband was like, that's not an expression. So if anybody wants to make it an expression.
Where did you hear it from?
I think I just jumbled up several phrases in my head. That's where I heard it from.
And Slughorn is no dummy. He immediately knows Dumbledore put you up to this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, hasn't he? I just thought there might be more. Did you? Well, then you were wrong. Wrong!
Yeah, caps lock Slughorn all of a sudden.
Caps lock Slughorn. Yeah. And yeah, he bellowed the last word. Before Harry could say another word, he slammed the dungeon door behind him.
Yeah, and Harry is a little, he kind of is like, okay, well, that made him mad, but I'll get invited to one of those parties and it'll all be fine. And it doesn't happen right away. This is not going over well.
No. And again, I guess, yeah, there, you know, there is this sense of, because Slughorn is kind of bombastic and sycophantic, that he's stupid, but he ain't dumb.
No. I mean, yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing. He just kind of just might not seem as, I don't know, it's a little more veiled than, I don't know, Snape or something.
Yeah. So, and then Hermione, you know, meanwhile, the Hogwarts library had failed Hermione for the first time in living memory. She was so shocked she even forgot that she was annoyed at Harry for his trick with the Beezor.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's no mention of it, like, except for one book who says, "We will not speak or give direction." I mean, why mention it then?
Right. It's just like the wickedest of the Horcrux, wickedest of the magical inventions. Yeah. Why mention?
Do you have any theories of what it could be?
No. And I'm so stressed out about this. Like, you have no idea how close. I am familiar with the word. I have heard people talk about it. I know there's some sort of Death Eater Voldemort relation or something. Very dark magic. But I have no idea what it is. For some reason, I was thinking of something that is so not it, an owl, but I know that's not it. So no, and I won't Google it, I swear.
Now, I know you won't, but this is exciting because this was one of the few things that, a big thing that Kevin was spoiled on and knew immediately what it was.
That's so funny because I have no idea. I have no idea.
No, I'm glad. And so, and then they move on to their little apparition lesson.
Oh yeah, this is quite interesting.
And so the three tenets of apparition is destination, determination, deliberation.
Triple D's.
The triple D's. And Harry, during this lesson, catches a little conversation of Malfoy with Crabbe and Goyle.
Yeah. Yeah. But
basically telling Crabbe and Goyle to just keep looking out, and Harry makes the comment of, "I tell my friends what I'm up to if I want them to keep looking out for me."
Oh my god. Okay. And they're kind of like, mind your business.
Yeah. And so nothing really happens. Again, very few people can master apparition, obviously, on their first attempt. The most exciting thing being that Susan Bones splinched herself by leaving her leg behind.
Yeah, like a plume of purple smoke or something like that. Like, oh my. Like,
the heads of houses converged on her. There was a great bang and a puff of purple smoke, which cleared to reveal Susan sobbing, reunited with her leg, but looking horrified.
I mean, I would be too. Goodness. They gotta concentrate more. The deliberation, like these three key words, which kind of stressed me out, to be quite honest.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of portrayed that this is very advanced magic and that a good portion of adult wizards don't even bother with it when they have brooms and the flute powder and other things. Because, again, it's just a pain in the butt.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It sounds very, you need to, it's almost like a good meditation, you know, like to get that, to clear your mind almost completely. It's not easy.
Yep. And then, so what do we got?
Marauder's map is coming back.
Yeah. Marauder's back coming up and he tries finding Malfoy and he's just like, he's in the Slytherin common room with Parkinson, Zabini, and Crabbe and Goyle. And so Harry has vowed, okay, I'm going to watch Malfoy like a hawk with my Marauder's map.
He doesn't really come to any great conclusions with this, does he?
The only thing of interest is there are points where it seems that Malfoy has disappeared from the map.
Yes. Yeah.
And Harry's contemplating, could Malfoy be physically leaving the school? But he kind of squashes that because it's like there's so much security. There's no way he could leave without someone knowing.
Unless, like, he was just playing dumb in the apparating, you know, because nobody successfully did it. Otherwise, we'd know.
No one successfully did it. And even so, the charm was only lifted in the Great Hall. Like, so it's not like you could apparate anywhere else.
I forget that. Okay. Yeah, because they make mention of that. Goodness.
Yeah.
The invisibility cloak, that's, I guess, something that Does that disguise you on the Marauder's map too?
No, it doesn't. It, okay. No, it will show you, they won't physically see you, but your name will still be where you are.
Okay.
It's, well, I have no idea. You know, which again shows how actually smart Harry's father and Sirius and Remus were to develop this item at such a young age, because again, it cannot be fooled by invisibility cloaks. It cannot be fooled by Polyjuice Potion. You know, what? Right. Even if you look like someone else, your real name will show up on the map.
There's some advanced magic there.
Again, like Fred and George, these tricksters who care nothing about grades, but they're actually really smart.
Yeah, yeah. No, it can't be easy.
Yeah, and then we find out that the Hogsmeade trip has been canceled.
On Ron's birthday. What a tragedy.
Yep. Yeah, on Ron's birthday, which cannot really be a surprise to anyone because after what happened to Katie.
Right. Yep. But he gets plenty of presents.
Yep, he gets lots of presents, and Harry gets him, what, I think, Quidditch gloves him being keeper. And he gets good haul. He gets a nice, fancy, like, Astrolabe watch from his parents. And then... And Harry's murmuring, kind of keeping trying to look at the Marauder's map. And then Ron starts acting funny. So what did you think of this sequence?
I mean, I think this was, and this I hate when this happens, but I was like, oh my gosh, he's finally going to confess his love for Hermione. And then like this random ass name comes out of his mouth, Romilda Vane. I don't even remember who she was, but he is like all of a sudden, like he has got to just tell Harry about this and confess his love to her.
Yes, and Harry sees the opened, like, thing of cauldron cakes or whatever.
Right. So
that Romilda Vane claimed were just spiked with fire whiskey, but obviously much more than that.
Much more than that. She has, and then I thought about our conversation last week about, you know, the kind of love potion and things like that. Because I don't know if I would call Ron has not been roofied, but yeah. I don't know. It's strange.
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely, you know, I'm sure this is a low level or mid tier love potion where in my headcanon, if we want to go really dark and Romilda wanted to take advantage of Ron, I don't think he would still have the know-it-all to not let it happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is just more about, again, pure, like, infatuation, like, trying to impress. Like, again, I think, again, as the power of the love potion goes up, the level of agency and consent goes down.
Yeah.
So Harry is trying to figure out, what do I do? What do I do? And he's like, okay, I gotta take him to Slughorn to get the antidote.
Right. And this is not like, they end up waking Slughorn up, because it's not like a, you know.
Yeah, because it's still pretty early.
Right. And Slughorn's like, he's not standoffish like he has been and ignoring him. He's not really welcoming, but he's fine with them.
Yeah, was this potion within date? They can strengthen, you know, the longer they're kept. That would explain a lot. Please, it's his birthday, Professor. Oh, all right, come in. Again, the way Rupert Grint plays this scene in the movie, again, it's hilarious. Again, they're all great comedic actors.
I'm gonna watch them, but I've got like, what, almost one and a half more books, and then I'll binge it.
Yeah, we're still not even two-thirds into the book yet. Damn.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And so Ron drinks the antidote and he's looking horrified.
Yes. Yeah. Because he just acted a fool.
Yep. And don't mention it, but boy, don't mention it. Pick me up. That's what he needs. I've got butterbeer. I've got wine. I've got one last bottle of this oak matured mead. Meant to give that to Dumbledore for Christmas. Ah, well. And so he pours this wine and Ron just starts frothing at the mouth.
Yeah. And they drops the glass, frothing at the mouth, and then
choking. And I'm just thinking, you know, I'm not saying this, like, I myself would be someone, I like to, in those sort of situations, I can freeze up, but I like to think that I may not be able to physically do something, but I will be the person to call 911, to have enough sense to call 911, even if I can't physically help in a specific situation.
Me too.
So I'm not saying I would be better than Slughorn, So it's not like I'm saying I could do much better than the way Slughorn reacts here, but Slughorn is a potions master. He's constantly around very dangerous things. The fact that he has this response, given that this is his profession.
Right.
The fact that he freezes up in such a way that he, as a potions master, hasn't had things go wrong in his class and just immediately needed to have an antidote ready. Like, that just seems so weird.
It is very strange. And he's, you know, kind of stunned as well. So it's like, so it makes you think, did he do this on purpose?
Ooh, theory. And, you know, Harry just does what the only thing he knows to do is just to shove the Bezoar down Ron's throat.
Yeah.
And that's, and then what we've got, he hurtled back to Ron's side, wrenched open his jaw, and thrust the Bezoar into his mouth. Ron gave a great shudder, rattling gas, and his body became limp and still. Spoiler, Ron died. No, I'm kidding.
I was like, I know that didn't happen, but I don't know what happened. So I was like, ugh, I guess I'll wait.
Yeah, so there we are. Chapters 17 and 18. Alrighty then. Then let's get in to Gothic Geek Out.
I feel like I'm going for the low-hanging fruit here, but the whole Tom Riddle's past and just, you know, the discussion of his ancestry and how he got to be the Voldemort we know and don't particularly love. But that's got some very Gothic roots of kind of like a, not a family curse, but just kind of like a, you know, bad seed in the family kind of trait.
Well, you know, one of my favorites, it's the one where like an illegitimate or some sort, a child that is scandalous in some sort of way is sent away and then they finally find their roots and they go back with revenge.
Yes, that is a great, great.
That's a great trope. Line. And the one of course, you know, that's again, low hanging fruit, that whole thing. Like you can only think about chapter 17. There's nothing in 18. I specifically honed in on the entire story of the murder of the Riddles coming full circle. Because we knew that even as early as the second book, we knew from our interactions with the Voldemort in the diary, the Tom Riddle in the diary, that he had killed his father.
Right. Yeah.
And then we knew in Goblet of Fire that clearly this wizard, a wizard killed the Riddles and the Muggles never knew what happened and then everything. And then we get even, and now we finally comes full circle where we get the full context of, we kind of already knew it, but now we super know, yeah, it was teenage Voldemort who killed his dad. And even more so, he blamed his own uncle for it.
Some dark stuff. That's the makings of a really scary book. So just taking
indeed.
That
indeed. So yeah, so just the pure mystery of the Riddles, that whole story coming, you know, giving all angles and all possible context to it.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people have made like comparisons analysis that certain books in the Harry Potter series like kind of mirror each other and have like a cyclical nature. I haven't gone into it in too much depth, but definitely the most obvious one is the huge similarities of Chamber of Secrets with the sixth book in regards to Voldemort's past. And, you know, it's gone to say that there were even elements of Chamber of Secrets that were eventually Harry the Writer chose to put off and put into book six rather than immediately into book two.
That makes sense. That makes sense, especially it ties coming, tying together. So.
But yeah, got super Gothic stuff.
Yeah. Very goth.
Alrighty then. And then our next exercise is Tarot of the Day.
I just want to show you something before you do that.
What?
I have on my note card, I have WTH is a horcrux. So
on your little index note card.
Yes.
Yep. And so with Tarot, the card I picked at random was the card number 14 in the major arcana, Temperance.
Abstinence.
Oh my god.
All right.
Temperance is the card for bringing balance, patience, and moderation into your life. You are being invited to stabilize your energy and to allow the life force to flow through you without force or resistance. It's time to recover your flow and get your life back in order and balance. Obviously, again, temperance can just in the purely spiritual and tarot sense is about balance and, you know, accommodating all perspectives. But in like a sociopolitical, cultural way, we have attached temperance with, again, sobriety. Mm-hmm. Because so much, I think from the late 19th, early 20th century, there were these temperance leagues that would promote, again, prohibition and just in general principle, you know, extol, you know, or would criticize, you know, the effects of alcoholism, you know, on family life and things like that. So it's so heavily in our culture associated with substance abuse. And it's just kind of ironic to pull that card because Ron is poisoned via an alcoholic beverage.
Yeah. And then we also, I know, you know, we kind of laughed about abstinence being mentioned, but that is also the woman in the portrait has kind of overdone it over Christmas. So, and she's kind of rein it in.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just trying to think over indulgence, balancing things. Well, just general balance. Harry needs to get it together with his Malfoy thing.
His obsession. Like, I think Malfoy should wear a sign that says, "Why are you so obsessed with me?" Like, at this point, I'm not really ever a fan of Malfoy, but it's kind of like, I feel like he's taking up more residence in Harry's head than...
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, and partially, again, I feel like if his friends and people would more indulge, I guess indulge is a patronizing, indulge, humor, both of those are like condescending words. If they would at least, you know, kind of be like, oh yeah, that's a possibility, but we don't know, rather than just trying to shut it down so much, then I feel like Harry wouldn't be pushed to be so excessive.
Yeah, you know, that you made me think that we don't, like, I can't think of off the top of my head any kind of really contentious moment that Harry and Draco have had, like them one-on-one. It's always been kind of Harry kind of observing things in the background, maybe a little bit of discussion about, you know, why his father's in jail, mm-hmm. but there
has been limited. Yeah.
I feel like in past books, there's been like a big moment and we just haven't mm-hmm. had that yet.
Yeah. The only moment we got is in Diagon Alley, and that was with his mother present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was fairly quick.
Here's an interesting note. There is an alchemy within temperance. This tarot card is about blending, mixing, and combining diverse elements in a way that creates something new and even more valuable than it separates parts. And so that makes me think of just the very specific, very intricate nature of Slughorn's potion lesson that Harry did not have the knowledge or know-it-all to properly engage with.
Right, yeah. He's cheating his way through that, so.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, this card reflects a higher learning. You are learning a great deal where you are now and are at peace with what you are doing, and it's all coming together well. Your inner voice is guiding you to the right outcome, and you are patiently listening and following. Which, I want to say that in terms of, you know, him and Dumbledore's lessons. But this is kind of this chapter was kind of the big point where there was some tension between Harry and Dumbledore. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't all happy blending and balance and harmony. It was a lot of, you know, struggles for power and into what is, you know, what is deemed suspicious, what is not.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little bit of tension there for a moment. Kind of awkward. Mm.
Indeed. Did you have any other thoughts?
No, I think Temperance is a good card to pull because of mm-hmm. some examples and of...
Oh, just Temperance getting drugged with a love potion. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. How could... the potions and the love potion. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, because Slughorn says, like, if they're left to just stew, they can become more powerful. And so, yeah. So even Ron's reaction was excessive, and that wouldn't have been the degree that Harry would have reacted if Harry had taken the love potion when Romilda Vane wanted him to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I had some time to like simmer and get more intense.
Indeed. Alrighty then. And then of my Black Moon astrology cards that I picked at random, I picked what was called Chiron?
Oh, Chiron?
Chiron, excuse me, yeah.
Okay.
Chiron. Chiron is not a planet, but a comet with a unique orbit that travels through the entire zodiac over approximately 51 years. I'm learning things. Chiron is the Greek word for man-horse. In myth, Chiron, the centaur, the wisest of all creatures, was the wounded healer and self-enlightened shaman. He was wounded in the flank and was almost crippled, but was rehabilitated from his wounds and sickness to pursue the healing arts through the guidance of Apollo, the god of light. For astrologers, Chiron has a special purpose as a bridge between the inner and the outer planets, a bridge between the animal and the human, the wisdom that lies in both forms. Okay.
Too bad this didn't show up when we're like a forensic.
With forensic, that would have been easy. Of course. Yeah. That would have been, yeah, super easy. Like in the chart, Chiron's place shows transition linking the mundane to the extraordinary. This heavenly body takes us on a journey through our darkness while we pass through the next side with strengths we did not realize. So yeah, like it seems to be like transitioning between polar opposites. Again, the mundane and the spiritual, the animal versus the quote unquote civilized human. And that just makes me think of just the pure thematic element of this book and these two chapters that we're transitioning from the super dark and serious and plot driven to this crazy ass, you know, stupid teen angst.
Yeah. I think of the pensive too a little bit, I guess, because there's
elaborate.
Yeah. The pensive just being the bridge between, you know, the kind of a very tangible bridge between the now and the past, and being able to access the past and memories through that. Mm-hmm. Even little vials of other people's memories. It's pretty exciting.
Oh, yes, very good. And then this is a card, Great Transformation. Therefore, in many ways, you are rising from the swamps. Chiron's energy says that once we are able to heal ourselves, we can also take the gift or wound and learn how to restore others. We can mend our wounds when we embrace, process, and understand the gift of illness or dysfunction. Chiron is also an expert in alchemy, which gives us the ability to transform the mundane into the marvelous. Again, notions of all the potions.
Notions of potions. It's a new podcast for you. Yeah.
Notions of potions. Transformation. Again, Harry is not transforming in his obsession with Malfoy. And also, you know, Hermione's not doing her usual, like, you know, emotional and spiritual growth. She's gotten a little better, but yeah, she's still in a very regressed state.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole thing with Ron is really kind of shaken her up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So, I'd be too. It's like, I've saved his ass for 5 years and he still won't. He still went for this bimbo.
Right, yeah. That is kind of offensive.
Again, like, the whole Ron-Hermione ship, not all fans are a big supporter of it. I'm not. And it's all about whether you see Ron's shortcomings as intrinsic to his character, or if you view his shortcomings as, you know, from a materialistic lens, and therefore Hermione is noble to not care about things such as social status and whatnot.
That's interesting. I
don't, because, you know, to me, again, it doesn't, social, as we all know, in our screwed up workplace, you know, society, that your accomplishments and your talent doesn't automatically equate greater social capital or promotion or salary or anything.
Not at all.
Not at all. So so I don't tend to view it in that way. It's like Ron could still lack the social capital and still have accomplishments on his own and have his own thing. And then I would kind of be more on board with the ship. But right now, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't quite decided how I feel about it yet. I think that I still need to. Well, we still haven't even got to the relationship part of it. We just in the friendship part. So.
Yep. Alrighty then, and then we move on to our final exercise, fan fiction time.
I would like to know if what would happen if the kind of interaction with Slughorn was less
fraught with tension.
Yeah, fraught with tension. Thank you for reading my mind, because that is what I wanted to say. I was like, tensionful. That if he was just
tenuous.
Like, tenuous. There we go. That's the word. You know, like, what if he would have said, like, hey, come here. He'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah, come here. And then, you know, poured him a drink and then told him everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to speed the story up along, I guess.
Yeah, no, you're trying to speed the story up. I feel like, you know, Slughorn could still have shut Harry down without having such a vitriol emotional response. He could have said, you know, hey, Harry, you know, that is between Professor Dumbledore and myself. I've shared that all I am comfortable with sharing. And quite frankly, I'm not in, you know, you're not entitled to my, you know, memory.
You know, he right away was like, Dumbledore has put you up to this. I almost feel like he should have said, like, if he wants to know, he can come and ask me, you know.
Sometime. Yeah, like, he could have played off that, oh, I'm really sad that, like, Dumbledore has, you know, put you up to this when this is a matter between him and myself. Like, there's a lot of ways he could have deflected and not divulged without, like, completely losing his shit the way he does.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was a little of an intense reaction. But there's got to be a reason for that. I mean, you don't have a kind of reaction like that if there's not there's more to it. It's just, what's the more to it?
And I think there's the question of, you know, is this why not just general, he's a talented wizard. Is this why Voldemort and the Death Eaters were looking for him?
Yeah. I guess I will find out. As I always say, I will find out. You already know, but I will find out. So
yeah. I'm just thinking of the ways that, you know, Slughorn could have, like, you know, saved face and still denied Harry and still left Harry, like, you know, frustrated. But yeah, and it comes off as pretty weak that the fact that he can't easily shut Harry down about this and, you know, continue to have his, like, parties and things like that and just be like, I'm not going to talk about this, Harry.
Right.
I'm not going to talk about this. And then walk away if Harry keeps talking about it. Like, I'm giving Slughorn all of, like, this is what you should do in establishing boundaries.
Here are the mature ways to do this. You know, the only other fan fiction that I came up with, which then I talked myself out of it, was what if Hermione would have been, you know, the person that gave Ron the love potion, and I was like, that wouldn't happen. So I disregarded that fan fiction very quickly.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking, well, I wonder if that just brings the question of, if Ron started spewing all this stuff about Hermione, would Harry believe it and not glance over and see the cauldron clakes? Would he honestly think, like, a part of me thinks that if Ron was spewing all this about Hermione, that Harry would actually believe it and not be immediate and not be suspicious of it.
That's an excellent point. He probably would have been like, oh my God, finally, like, let's just have this out instead of, and yeah. And then he would have been like, you know, mm-hmm.
With Slughorn suggesting that these things can get stronger if left to stew, we don't know how long it might have lasted.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Thanks for saving that one, because I was like, oh, I talked myself out of it. But what about you? What were yours this week?
I had two. I was like, what if Morfinn had remembered this memory earlier in life? Because it's left that basically that Morfinn was on his deathbed when Dumbledore came and extracted this memory. Or again, going even beyond that, you know, even if he had found out earlier that he had this memory, he was shut up in Azkaban. What if Voldemort had not done the extra and I think excessive act of planting this false memory, and Morfinn just being like, I didn't do it. There was this kid that looked exactly like one of the murdered guys who came and visited my house.
I don't know. Would people have believed him based on his kind of proximity to...
Yeah, I don't think... Again, I don't think it would have saved him from... It wouldn't have saved him from Azkaban, but I feel like just having that rumor out there, for Dumbledore to catch earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, possibly being able to... Because it's not really stated how early or how long, like, collecting all these memories has taken Dumbledore. Like, we don't know if he's literally done this over, like, months or a year, or if he's been doing this for, like, 10 years, just in case, to get anything he can possibly can about, learn whatever he can about Voldemort, whether or not he was going to knowing whether or not he would specifically be giving Harry lessons with them.
That's a pretty creepy hobby. Dumbledore, like, collecting other people's memories. That sounds pretty dark. Yeah.
Because I tend to think that this is something he's been, again, doing as a creepy hobby for 10 plus years, because his detail he goes into, like, people are too terrified to talk about the few people who remember, you know, and know who Voldemort's identity, like, really is and who he used to be. Very few of them will, like, talk about it. They're too terrified to even say anything to anybody.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. I feel like he's been doing it for quite some time.
Yes.
Probably got even more unrelated memories.
Or again, in the other scenario, like, again, if Dumbledore had found this memory earlier in Morfin's life and was able to secure Morfin's release, like, how would Voldemort deal with the fact that not only another heir of Slytherin exists, but the only pureblood, the only pureblood heir to Slytherin is now walking free?
It's kind of cut quite the conundrum. I mean, he doesn't really have an issue killing purebloods, does he?
No, he... No. Like, again, I'm just thinking of that in that villainous mind of what he thinks the best strategy is. Because on the one hand, he would want Morfin's, like, to bolster, like, supports, like, oh, this, you know, we're the great Slytherin line. But at the same time, again, his position is so precarious because he is a half-blood. And, you know, if there's another heir of Slytherin, not that I think Morfin has the intelligence to be a dastardly, you know, pureblood supremacist, like, villain to organize a movement.
Yeah.
But just purely having the pureblood heir in existence, you know, thinking like it, you know, thinking that that's, you know, it completely undermines his own, you know, position as being the leader of this pureblood movement.
Yeah, I don't know. That's... Yeah, I mean, I don't think that guy would run, like, a counter campaign.
Probably, yeah, like, nothing.
Over pretty quick.
Yeah, like, it's just interesting, especially in the context of, again, Morfin is just, again, a belligerent, you know, racist. You know, the whole strategy of white supremacists, you know, in recent years is that they're trying to be sneaky and try to appear mainstream. They don't want to look like skinheads because they want to get more supporters and want to blend into quote-unquote normal to desensitize how extreme they are.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Thinking about it. Yeah. So my other one was, what if Ron had not eaten the cauldron cakes?
We would have just had a boring old evening full of just playing with the catchers. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm just trying to... Well, the thing is... The critical thing that brings into play, if Harry doesn't have to take Ron to Slughorn and Slughorn doesn't pour that poisoned wine, where does that poisoned wine end up? Who ends up getting poisoned? Is it Slughorn himself?
Oh, that's a good question. Because, I mean, I think it might have just sat there for a while. Unless he's like, just wants to have a nice glass of wine with a drink.
Yeah, so it's a sense of... you know, like, that poison would have just been sitting there, and who knows when Slughorn would have had guests, maybe, like, one of the teachers, and he was just, oh, let's have a nightcap, and then McGonagall starts frothing at the mouth.
Oh, stressful. Yeah,
that's... And we know from his reaction that if it was just him and one other person, he wouldn't be able to react quickly to save them.
Right, yeah, he was kind of dumbfounded. Also, how did it even get there? We don't know that.
No, we don't know that. All we know is that he was intending it to be a present for Dumbledore.
Ooh. Well, okay. He was probably not going to be like, I was going to give this to Dumbledore. You know, it's poison. He probably wouldn't reveal that to everybody. Huh. I don't know.
All righty then. But yeah, those are my two fan fictions. All righty then. And thus concludes this evening's episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time and we will get into chapters 19 and 20, Elf Tales and Lord Voldemort's Request.
And I've got to wait several more chapters before there's one called Horcruxes. So,
awesome. Yeah. You have to wait till page 492.
Ugh, gosh. All right. I'll survive.
That just made me think of Alan Rickman's turn to page 394.
Beautiful.
All right. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMare Studios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.